the aisle. At a combined weight of 436 pounds, the team of Jeffrey Martin, Brian Berga, the Jersey Wrecking Crew.
And that can only mean one thing. That means you're listening to the High Spot Podcast. Catch us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast. I am the trendsetter, Brian Berg, and one member of the Jersey Wrecking Crew, and alongside my tag team partner, Jeff Martin. We are excited because we have that feel of WrestleMania, but not really, because it's Survivor Series. We've been campaigning it all week long, hashtag make Survivor Series great again. You know what? It has the potential to be that. Not only do we have to look forward to Survivor Series in the icon versus icon, or in this case, Beast versus Beast, Brock Lesnar and Bill Goldberg, but we have NXT TakeOver in Toronto, Canada as well to look forward to. A match that, if you look at this card, folks, it might not be the names you expect to be on an NXT TakeOver card, but man, does it have the potential to hit a home run.
I mean, it could be the new beginning for NXT as they ascend to the Air Canada Center in Toronto, Canada on Saturday. And then you have Survivor Series on Sunday. So I'm telling you, it's going to be a great card. It's going to be great two nights for the people in Canada that are there. And like I said, before we even started, make Survivor Series great. Make Survivor Series great again. And I think that's what we're going to do. I think that's what's going to happen. And I'm just very excited, man. I'm really looking forward to Saturday and Sunday.
What we also look forward to is the fact that, you know, Jeff and I, we talk and we yak about what's going on in these certain events and the booking, the storylines, and all things that are professional wrestling, which is just a part of the beast itself. But we were able to have Jason Powell on the show, and you guys can catch him on ProWrestling.net as well as hear him and his take when he's spoken to the good old JR, Jim Ross, on the Ross Report on Podcast One. We're able to have him on, sit down with him, and speak to him about this whole potential of what Survivor Series NXT is all about. And when we sat down and we talked to him, this is what he had to say.
Hey, listen, Jason, big time coming up now. We've got Survivor Series and NXT TakeOver. Let's go to Survivor Series real quick. Your first thoughts, your impressions on the card right now?
You know, I think it's how much people are getting into the Raw versus SmackDown theme. I think you have a main event that has worked, that's clicked with Goldberg and Brock Lesnar. It was one that I can't say that I was all fired up about when, you know, it was rumored for so many years that it could happen again. But once they started to actually promote it, it kind of feels like old WWE, you know, where the machine kind of took over. I usually dread it now. Like, okay, it looks good on paper. How are they going to screw this up? But it's been the opposite. I think they've done a really good job with that.
Now, obviously, with the buildup between Goldberg and Brock Lesnar, Jeff and I have spoken countless times on the show about, you know, the nostalgia factor. I mean, we always love watching heroes of our past come in and come back. Now, I don't think anybody would argue the fact that the last time these two faced each other, about almost 12 years ago, didn't leave a great taste in our mouth. What can be expected in terms of the expectation for this? I mean, I'm not expecting a four-star wrestling match in this. What expectations would we have as the fans to look at something like this headlining Survivor Series?
Keep your fingers crossed, to be honest with you.
Nobody gets hurt, right?
Well, yeah, that, and I mean, Bill Goldberg hasn't had a match in 12 years, and Bill Goldberg was never known as a great wrestler. He was really good at what he did, but that was mostly brief matches and spear and jackhammer, and that's the formula that worked for him. I think you're going to see, you know, shortcuts. It sounds harsh, but just a lot of brawling. I'm curious to see if they have anyone interfere in this just to kind of give him a break. But, yeah, I mean, it'll be the, you know, as JR likes to say, the good old-fashioned slobber knocker. And I think the atmosphere is going to be really intriguing, too, because I don't know what Toronto's going to do. I mean, everyone's been cheering Goldberg thus far except for the one show I was at in Minneapolis, but that's Lesnar country. Toronto is Bret Hart country, kind of Brock Lesnar country, because he identifies himself as now living in Canada, and they even had the Canadian flag on the UFC pay-per-view. So, I mean, I don't know how that goes, but that adds to the appeal.
Jason, I have a over-under here with a lot of guests here. Over-under 10 for Suplex City that Goldberg visits on in Toronto.
Oh, boy. I would hope under. But I'm gonna. If I was a betting man, and I am, but not on pro wrestling, sadly, I'll say over.
Over. Wow. A lot of people have said that too. And, you know, I've mentioned to Jeff and our guests that have gone that factor of the over 10 for Suplex City. Well, if he does visit Suplex City over 10 times, we can, without a shadow of a doubt, say that it will be Goldberg's last match.
Yeah, it's, boy, I cringe whenever guys who are in there on a regular basis start taking all those suplexes. And now, I mean, Goldberg's 49 years old. He hasn't been in the ring in 12 years, but keeps himself in tremendous shape. You know, you got to give him that. He looks the part. I know he says he's down compared to his glory days, but he certainly looks the part. It's not, you know, if this were Sting getting in there, even before what happened with Sting, I would have been very nervous, but less nervous with a guy like Goldberg. But again, never been that wrestler's wrestler. I'm going to cringe every time he goes up for one. And I don't know about you guys, as far as the outcome goes of this, I got to think that if it's a clean pinfall, it's got to be Brock Lesnar, but Shane McMahon. And do they want to set that up for Mania? Is there going to be some sort of an interference finish that leads to Goldberg winning? I'm kind of curious to know what you guys think.
I could see that, Jason. I also could see that Brock's been built up, I mean, as this monster. He pummeled and destroyed Randy Orton, and I could see the same thing, just building him up to WrestleMania for Shane McMahon. I don't know exactly how Shane McMahon interferes. Maybe he comes to help Goldberg, comes to his aid, but to me, I think clear-cut, Brock Lesnar is going to come out the winner, and it's going to be 1-1.
Isn't that just bass-ackwards that we're talking about? You know, using Goldberg to set up a match with Shane McMahon.
Yeah, it should be the other way. I know.
Well, I think it reaches the point, Jason, wouldn't you say right now that the way they've been building up Brock Lesnar, and we've critiqued the way it's been done and how it's been done, and, you know, I wasn't a fan of the last WrestleMania where Brock Lesnar was going up against Dean Ambrose. Didn't work for me, but are we running out of opponents for Brock Lesnar? Has the WWE tried to build him up so much that now, I mean, who's left on the roster? I mean, we're bringing in Goldberg, and now people have even talked about, even Jim Ross talked about, you know, the only other person that probably could come back, I wouldn't know if he necessarily faced Goldberg because we've seen, Brock Lesnar because we've seen it before, is Kurt Angle. What else is left out there?
Not much. You know, Jeff Hardy, I guess, if he were to come back, but you would think if he comes back, it's probably doing something with Matt and the whole Broken Universe bit. I mean, it's a problem for WWE overall, not just in terms of how they book or who they book to face Brock Lesnar. They're running out of names from the past, and that's something they've relied heavily on because of their deficiencies when it comes to booking the everyday talent. We should be excited about Kevin Owens, or just, you know, pick your wrestler. There should be several guys on that main roster right now that we're looking at who haven't faced Brock Lesnar, and we're seeing, wow, they're really building this guy up. This is going to be a collision when it happens. But because they do such a poor job week in and week out, we're left going, hey, what about Shinsuke Nakamura and Samoa Joe? And it's because Vince hasn't gotten his hands on them yet to screw them up.
You know, that's a great segue to building stars. And someone that's been built up really well on the SmackDown brand has been The Miz. And there's no doubt, there's no denying the fact that this is probably the best run he's ever had. He's just got the whole package now. Maurice just being the ultimate heel, cheating every time. And just his promo skills have gotten way much better. And I think that aspect with the realism between him and Daniel Bryan has been outstanding. Tough luck for Dolph Ziggler against The Miz on SmackDown. Best of both worlds. Well, the best world for The Miz here is what's his future? And for Dolph Ziggler, it's got to be just to blow another meaningless title run.
Yeah, you know, I think they did this in a weird way to protect Dolph. I wouldn't be surprised if that Intercontinental Championship does end up going to Raw. I'd leave it alone. I'd bring the Cruiserweights along with it to SmackDown. I just don't think Raw needs three championships, three singles championships, two secondary, but I think they may do that. And the reason I say it protects Dolph is that he doesn't have the stigma of being the guy that lost the Intercontinental Championship for SmackDown. That's something Daniel Bryan and The Miz can kind of go back and forth over. So with Miz, you know, I think he'll be okay. I've been ready for him to, because he has been so good, to be elevated into more of the main event picture, less secondary. And then Ziggler, yeah, I don't know what you do. I mean, his feud with Miz means something. I'd like to see Dolph turn heel, but there's just been no signs of that happening. I don't know where they go with Dolph from here. By the way, one of the other reasons I think they could end up, the mentality might be, yeah, let's go with the Intercontinental Championship on Raw as well. If you look at the SmackDown mid-card, it's like four guys. There's not a lot of depth there. And so I think that's one of the reasons we've seen the Miz and Ziggler feud last as long as it has.
could a trade be possible where Miz goes to Raw and when they get like a package of Cesaro and Zayn?
You know, they've been talking about that trade, but at the same time, it's Daniel Bryan also admitting he has no idea how it works, and they're making this up on the fly. I guess my guard is up a little bit for something where we find out after the match. It looks like Raw is getting the IC title, and it turns out that they worked a trade right before the match or something like that, where Stephanie and Mick Foley were willing to wager on Miz. And so the Intercontinental Championship and Sami Zayn end up on SmackDown. A complete shot in the dark on that. Nothing I've heard. But, I think they will do some trades. But if I'm WWE, as good as Miz has been, I think he gets lost in the shuffle on Raw, where he can be a player on SmackDown. And he has that good, intense rivalry with Daniel Bryan going. They haven't really found a way to do much with it just because Daniel can't wrestle. But he can always bring somebody in to kind of be his surrogate. And so I hope Miz stays where he's at. I like Miz being kind of a bigger fish in a small pond. But at the same time, you know, the guys you mentioned, I'd also like for them to be bigger fish in a small pond too.
Well, yeah, and no question about that. Talking to Jason Powell here. Jason, you know, something you said, it's been overlooked a little bit, which we mentioned the secondary titles of the United States in the Intercontinental Championship. The Cruiserweight division, to me, being brought over to Raw, just to me, made completely no sense. I knew that their three-hour show wanted to obviously take up some more time, but I feel they've been, like you said, lost in the shuffle. And now, if the possibility is, and you would think it would be moving over to SmackDown, what sense do you get of the Cruiserweight division now? I was always worried about the fact that the Cruiserweights came back. I was always the belief that when you label them Cruiserweights, you basically gave them a ceiling, that they couldn't aspire to be anything else except Cruiserweights because they were going to have that label or, in this sense, stigma behind them. So if the Cruiserweights move over to SmackDown now, what do you do in terms of storyline angles? It's a two-hour show. We have the champion going in Survivor Series, the Brian Kendrick against Kalisto. It seems like TJ Perkins is kind of worked his way out of the main storyline. What's your thought process on the Cruiserweight division, the potential it might have on SmackDown rather than Raw?
I think it's a much better fit. I never understood that to begin with. Again, you know, the depth issues that SmackDown has, I think it helps fill some time, and I like the writing staff on SmackDown just seems to be stronger. The thing that excites me about the Cruiserweights going to SmackDown and also the addition of 205 Live. It's still an if, but I do think that's where they end up, is on SmackDown, the Cruiserweights. But with 205 Live, I took part in a Triple H conference call that he does prior to all the NXT TakeOver shows with the pro wrestling media, and he didn't come right out and say it, but he was so enthusiastic about the Cruiserweights and 205 Live that I just got the impression that this is his baby again. This isn't something that Vince McMahon's going to have his hands all over as far as 205 Live goes, and it's back to Hunter and his guys. We saw what a good job that they can do, that they were able to do with the Cruiserweight Classic. So it gives me some hope for the Cruiserweights. I think Vince it's never been his thing. I do feel like they need an identity. I don't know that Kalisto was that guy. I didn't think TJ Perkins was. He was kind of championed by default because they couldn't get Kota Ibushi. I'd love to see them get Kota Ibushi, and if they're really serious about this, I think go ahead and break the bank to get this guy. I mean, I'm not saying you got to spend Lesnar money to get him, but maybe they've already tried. But I think that's the thing that's really missing, is kind of that face of the division and a guy that's so good you forget you're watching a Cruiserweight, or you get excited that you're watching a Cruiserweight because his matches mean something. They're really a hot feud away from having something there, but I don't think it's going to happen on Raw because the formula has been the champion and his challenger in one segment, and then a meaningless six-man tag. And it's just not getting them anywhere. They'll have their own dedicated storylines and things like that on 205 Live.
That hot rivalry you're talking about, Jason, are those two on this roster right now, or is it something like Kota Ibushi where if he does come in, or they're not in the WWE right now to get that hot type of rivalry they want for the Cruiserweight division?
Well, you know, they'll be getting Grand Metalik in. They're getting Akira Tozawa. Both very talented guys, and I don't know that Kalisto's that guy, but maybe you get him in there with a Tozawa. Maybe that does something. They may have one half of it with the guys they have, but I'm not sitting here going, boy, if they just start doing something with these two that are already on the roster, I'm not feeling it. I mean, Kendrick is solid as a heel. He's doing a really good job. I don't think he's what people think of when it comes to Cruiserweight. You know, he's kind of working a heavyweight style, and that's fine. I think you need some variety in that division. But I do think you need a face of the division. I don't think they have that. Their heels are lackluster beyond Kendrick. You have Drew Gulak, I like Arya Davari a lot, but they haven't done anything with him. Tony Nese, they're just very random and bland, and they need good, strong heels. And if they can't, even if they can't get that, they just need that centerpiece rivalry. It doesn't have to be a feud, just a rivalry between two excellent wrestlers that really grab people's attention.
And you talk about one division that's trying to catch on, one other division that's caught on this whole year, and it's been a revolution. It's been the women's revolution. And we get to the elimination matches, what I love about Survivor Series and Team Raw and Team SmackDown Live. Your thoughts how this match goes on? Because to me, Raw is the bigger brand. It is the, I guess, the A brand, and SmackDown has been perceived as the, you know, the little B plus brand. Your thoughts on how this match is going to go?
They kind of showed that the Team Raw women were on the same page, and the SmackDown women, for that matter. As much as I hated seeing Bayley take part in a 5-on-1 beatdown, it just went against her character. It was asinine that they scripted her in that segment. There's no reason she couldn't have stood off to the side and looked kind of sheepish about the whole thing. And then once the SmackDown women came out to even the odds, then she had no choice to get involved. I hated that segment. Can't emphasize.
Yeah, good point. Enough. Good point, Jason.
Yeah, it's not her character. You know, lovable Bayley doesn't beat down in a 5-on-1. It was just awful. But that one kind of feels, I'm with you, I guess I lean Raw brand, because now they're all on the same page. That's kind of the thing I look for in these Survivor Series matches is, all right, is there one team they're kind of establishing is on the same page? And I think we'll probably get to it. There is one that I think jumps out where they're, one of the teams is not, the other one seems to be. And in this case, it's a bit of a toss-up. I think with Nia Jax, it's going to be hard to eliminate her. They could do a DQ. Charlotte, I mean, I don't know how they count this, but she has that perfect record on pay-per-view, and would this count against that? I guess you can kind of dance around that if you want to. But yeah, I'll go with the Raw women.
Yeah, you know, and what I like about this Survivor Series is I've told Brian that this has been kind of like the forgotten pay-per-view or special or network special, whatever they call it now. And I told Brian in the beginning, let's make Survivor Series great again. And no pun there, but, you know, I was let's make
familiar,
it great
it?
Again, you know?
Dave Sapolsky would fire you.
I know. I don't want to be Joey Styles there. But and it's our show, so I won't fire myself. But the importance that they have, that it's a teamwork, and I saw on Talking Smack, just the importance that they're going to, you know, decide to coexist for one night. I think it just shows the importance of getting the win between Raw and SmackDown, which I think is important. So it shows that it's important to get the victory at Survivor Series.
You're into this more than I am. I'm not a big fan of Survivor Series, I gotta say. The whole elimination concept, it sounds fun, we get it once a year, and if they overload the show with Survivor Series matches, once the first one's out of the way, it kind of loses its appeal for me. They're usually random. This does give them something, but what that something is brand loyalty. And right now, the only people who seem to care, they're kind of making this last-ditch effort to make it seem like the wrestlers care too, but they've all been bickering with one another. You know, the match I was referring to is the tag match. All of a sudden, the Usos are big smiling baby faces again, and they're happy to be with the guys whose knees they've taken out left and right. But it looks to me like Team SmackDown is on the same page, where Gallows and Anderson are threatening to stab everyone in the back, and they're still. So I would think Team SmackDown goes over there. But I to get back to the point here, it's just Mick Foley, Stephanie McMahon care about it, Daniel Bryan, Shane McMahon do. The broadcast teams kind of do. And I guess now Undertaker does. That seems, you know, it.
Don't want to get him mad now.
Well, it's just you're feuding over brand
loyalty. Bragging rights, basically. Which was the pay-per-view.
But what do those really get you? You know, it the pay-per-view ends, and maybe on Raw and SmackDown this week they talk about it and everyone moves on. I think it's better than nothing. I think it will mean more a year from now when we haven't seen all these people share a ring, you know, just 4 months ago. The draft wasn't even 4 months ago. It's a minor hook. I'm kind of anxious just for things to get back to normal, though.
I understand. I think once we head toward, once we preview the men's Raw and SmackDown match, I'll get to why I feel excited about it. But Brian's got a point here about the State of the Union of the WWE.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously we
can sit here and compare the differences between Raw and SmackDown. The simplistic thing of do simple math, Raw's a three-hour show. So how do they cover up a three-hour show? Hey, let's do a one-hour special. WWE State of the Union with the Commissioner and General Manager, Stephanie and Daniel Bryan, and Mick Foley and Shane McMahon involved in the whole segment after Raw. My question to you, Jason, is when you looked at this, you mentioned how you're not invested into it, but how real did it feel, the heatness between, you know, Mick Foley taking things personally and between Daniel Bryan? Did that give any extra sizzle to this event, or is it just something that was completely out of control? Because from watching it, it didn't really look there was a lot of control in terms of what was being said. The mediator, Renee Young, didn't really seem to be able to hold back either one of them.
No, it, to me, it was a train wreck. You know, I think Mick and Daniel take this, you know, they take it very seriously, and to their credit, I think everyone did. But I thought Shane McMahon's face kind of told the story of this segment. He kind of stopped talking and just stared at the ground. I think he knew, wow, this is not going well. And Stephanie was kind of trying to get things back on track. Renee was as well. You got Mick Foley kind of going off in this weird emotional tangent.
It went off track, didn't it? It really did. It really did.
Yeah, it was weird. You know, all of a sudden he starts getting all emotional about Stephanie McMahon again. It's like, just please stop. I didn't think it. He also, I guess the other thing you have to keep in mind is it's a limited audience seeing it. Yeah, there's, you know, million plus network subscribers. How many people really took the time to watch that? And if they did, I mean, you already
Unfortunately,
have
I did.
Well, yeah, me too, you know, and I feel the same way. We have the network already. Did anyone buy the network to see this? Was anyone sold on Survivor Series because of it? It's just kind of icing on the cake, I guess, for anyone who liked it. I don't think, at the same time, I don't think it made anyone go, that's it, I'm canceling my subscription.
All right, and real quick here with the tag teams, who has the better tag team, Raw or SmackDown? Looking on paper, who has the better tag team, and who do you think is going to come out victorious?
Well, I do think it's Team SmackDown, because they've been shown to be unified, as silly as it was for the Usos to be getting along with American Alpha and everything. They seem like the unified bunch, where Anderson and Gallows are feuding with everybody, and so I could see Anderson and Gallows doing something that costs Team Raw. They're pretty even in terms of talent, but at the same time, I think SmackDown has done a much better job positioning their tag teams. I mean, who would have guessed that Heath Slater and Rhino would mean something? And they do. The Usos should mean more. American Alpha should mean more. But I think this is going to be a chance for American Alpha. I think this is going to be, and it's how I would do it. We'll see if they do. We've been kind of waiting for that breakout moment from them, and I could see this being it, where they just end up plowing through a couple of teams at the end. They stand tall. They're the one. You know, they all of a sudden they come out of Survivor Series looking really good, having beaten some of those Raw teams. And I don't know how they get New Day out of there, but I do think SmackDown comes out on top.
You're going to have a grumpy Stephanie McMahon heading into the five team elimination for Raw versus SmackDown with the guys. You're going to have a very grumpy Stephanie McMahon. The way you're,
the way you're booking this as to be, SmackDown will be up 2-0.
Well, no, I gave
event.
Raw women.
Oh, 2-1, 2-1. So they're
2-1.
So they're going to need this one. And your thoughts now, and I will tell you in a few minutes why I think that there's something that's going to happen here. The Team Raw, you got, you know, KO, Seth Rollins, of course, Y2J, drinking in man, Braun Strowman. Your thoughts here, how is this going to go?
Boy, until Tuesday night, I was thinking, wow, they might actually put Team SmackDown over here. And the reason I thought that was that Stephanie was the one, it seemed like they were setting something up with Mick Foley being fired, because she started pointing out that, well, I wouldn't have put the entire Cruiserweight division on the line like Mick did. She's been talking about there'll be changes made and you know, just basically making threats. Where on the SmackDown side, it's just kind of been happy-go-lucky, go win one. So I thought, well, maybe they're going to follow through on this and actually have Team SmackDown win, Stephanie fires Mick Foley. Then we turn around and we get Undertaker on SmackDown. He starts talking about how this matters to him. You know, his character was born at Survivor Series. He's a SmackDown guy, and it was basically, you better win this. You know, there's going to be hell to pay for if you guys don't come through. And now it has me thinking that Raw wins somehow. I don't know how they get there. My guess would be Roman Reigns, because, well, it's Roman Reigns, and that's what Vince does. But I could see it being where AJ Styles is the guy that Taker blames for this somehow. I don't. I mean, they've already established that he and Shane are on good terms. He put Shane over. I don't think they're going to go Undertaker Ellsworth as much as I would get a huge kick out of that. I don't think it's going to be Dean Ambrose either. And so, I think you're kind of looking at Taker being pissed at AJ Styles it coming out of this somehow. Whether that leads to a match at the Rumble or, you know, where that match or Mania itself, I don't know. But that's that. They kind of turned me last night with that angle. I liked it.
Well, it's definitely really promising to see Undertaker show up, and looked in tremendous shape, considering the fact he was coming off hip surgery not too long ago. So, you know, and him coming out of that speech about talking about how he's back to, you know, to start digging graves and kicking, you know, taking names. And, you know, it was really enthusiastic to see him there and brought a little bit more of nostalgia feeling we've been talking about leading up to Survivor Series. My question for you, and to see him against AJ Styles would be amazing, especially WrestleMania, which Undertaker went out to say doesn't really define him anymore. We'll see what that means as the future approaches to WrestleMania. My question for you, Jason, is that, you know, I've always been a huge fan of Survivor Series when I was younger, and Jeff had mentioned about the classic Survivor Series matches. Yeah. My biggest gripe with this whole thing, I know we have Brock Lesnar, Goldberg as your main event, selling the card of people coming in to watch it. But do you have something or anything against the fact that the titles, besides the Intercontinental Championship, the United States title's not on the line? The tag team titles are not on the line for either show. The women's titles are not on the line. And the Universal and the WWE World title are not on the line. Do you have something? For me, it's a gripe because I want to see those titles be competed for. Was there enough depth on the roster for either brand to not include the champions in this? Or do you need them included to make this a somewhat sustainable card?
I mean, you could kind of do more of a makeshift team where there's a weak link or two. You're kind of watering down the Raw versus SmackDown aspect of it. I guess once they went with Raw versus SmackDown, there was only so much they could do. I think you had to have Roman Reigns in that match. The only guy who, I mean, there's a couple of guys who don't have anything going on this show, or so it seems at least. You never know if they'll find a way to add them somehow. But Dolph Ziggler doesn't now. But they had to have that play out on Tuesday night. Dolph easily could have been on Team SmackDown had that played out sooner. You don't have Rusev doing anything on the show. But there's not a lot. I mean, and Raw, the Team Raw, what a mess. I mean, it's Strowman, who I think is a heel, even though he's been arguing with Jericho. And then you have Kevin Owens and Jericho are heels, but they're also going to be baby faces because they're in Canada, and they're pretty much baby faces anyway. You have Seth Rollins, who is a baby face, and Roman Reigns, who Vince McMahon thinks is a baby face.
And everyone else just hates
him. It's a heel team.
And everybody else hates him, exactly.
Roman Reigns could be his own heel team.
Pretty much. I mean, I get what you're saying about not having title matches on the show. I think there's enough going on, though. You know, with the whole hook of the two title matches that they have, it potentially leading to both titles flip-flopping brands, and then the Team Raw versus SmackDown means something to somebody, and then of course Taker and Goldberg. I think they have enough going to get by this month. I mean, keep in mind, they have two more pay-per-views coming up in December, so we won't have to wait long to see those championships defended.
Here we go. We have, and this is all started when they said that the Cruiserweight division was going to SmackDown, and this is where I started thinking and I started doing fantasy booking.
This is where Jeff started developing his theory.
Yeah, this is where the, you know, fantasy booker in me, you know, came out. My conspiracy theory here. No, yes. Not conspiracy, but a theory. I'm thinking they got to fill something with that hour. I mean, they don't have enough depth to me, unless they're going to really, really promote, you know, more women's matches. To me, I think we haven't seen Triple H since he cost Seth Rollins the title. How about the idea that he comes out and he says that, you know what, you think Raw and SmackDown are the popular brands? How about NXT? Is there any chance that theory could be proven right at Survivor Series?
Ooh.
That's a good one. You got Jason thinking there.
Yeah, I mean, it's a card they always have up their sleeve if they ever want to play it, and boy, you know, it's...
Because it would make a great time, since the Cruiserweight division most likely is gone, right? And if you have Triple H, you know, and people have said it before, the theory that NXT would, you know, you were talking about going live eventually, how about they hit more mainstream people and have about a couple matches with NXT? Do you think that Triple H, who's been sitting... you know, waiting, nobody knows where he's been, supposedly, and no explanation for him costing Seth Rollins the title. Could it be a possibility?
I think it's a long shot. I mean, I like the idea that, yeah, it's Raw versus SmackDown and NXT's left out of this. I fear it. It sounds fun. But again, look what Vince McMahon did with the cruiserweights. Look what Vince McMahon has done with so many people who have been called up from NXT who have just been wasted. And so even though it's like, yeah, boy, it would get people buzzing if all of a sudden they replaced those, you know, two matches a week, basically, is what they were giving the cruiserweights with NXT matches. But then you don't have the Samoa Joes and the Shinsuke Nakamura's just kind of waiting, you know, because those are the guys that people are excited about facing Brock Lesnar and you know, just the big time matches. If I had to put money on it, I would say no. But I like the creativity. I mean, never say never.
So you're saying there's a chance.
It is that time of year. You know, I mean, Mania is approaching. We should be seeing Hunter again soon. It's kind of shocking we haven't. I can't believe they never tied up that storyline. So, hey, if it happens, I'll be the first to give you credit.
Well, that was just going to lead to my next question, although I really don't believe in Jeff's theory, the fact that NXT will be invading and do some type of invasion angle like we did.
Not more of like an invasion, but more of like, you know, we're the brand and we should be taking notice, and that's a way for them to at least, you know, show their stars that are on NXT. Not saying full-blown invasion, but a chance to fill the hour.
Well, I hope not, because that's failed one time before with a watered-down version of WCW, and then, you know, we don't need to see that again anytime soon. But I do see, in this case, Triple H actually involving himself somehow. Like you mentioned before, Jason, WrestleMania is, believe it or not, just around the corner. We haven't seen Hunter in a really long time, considering after costing Seth Rollins the championship. I could see him interfering, costing Team Raw the event, and really help boosting this whole rivalry between the two brands, because ever since the draft began and during the draft process, and now, you said, what, it's been almost like 3 months now that it's happened, they're really bashing SmackDown for the fact that they're not giving it the credit it deserves. I like to feel some of the diehards or people that do enjoy watching it, like myself, that I used to watch it religiously. I enjoyed it a little bit more than Raw in this case, because there's opportunity. How do you feel the dynamic is between, you know, the storylines in terms of creative? Because for me, when I watch SmackDown, all I see is matches and storylines. When I see Raw, all I see is basically Mick Foley and Stephanie McMahon somehow involving themselves in whatever storyline they want to. They become the main focus. How do you separate those two in terms of, does SmackDown get another hour? Do you take an hour away from Raw? How do you legitimize this competition, or is just there no way to legitimize it?
Oh, in a perfect world, Raw would be 2 hours. I mean, there's going to be that passionate, diehard wrestling fan that can't get enough. They'd take 4 hours if they could. But the average fan doesn't want to watch 3 hours of wrestling on Monday. It was proven back in the Nitro days. It's being proven again. You know, they'll point to different factors for ratings and viewerships declining, and look at the NFL, it's happening to them too, and all of that. It just keeps going down. You know, and yeah, you have your weeks where all of a sudden it'll go up a little bit, but the average just keeps dropping. It's too much. And it's another thing Hunter has actually acknowledged in those media conference calls. He just talks about the burden of coming up with 3 hours of material each week. The other issue that I see on Raw, in addition to the need for a lot of filler that just comes along with that third hour, I know this is, everyone's got their Roman Reigns moment and boo Roman, boo that. Look, the way they have booked him has been so detrimental. He should be a heel. And if he had been turned heel, whenever they turned him, he'd be that much closer to being an edgy babyface. But he refuses to budge. And because he's refused to budge on Roman, it screwed up Seth Rollins. Seth Rollins should have been a returning hero. The fans embraced him. They wanted to see him. They wanted him to be a babyface. And instead, they turned him right. You know, they had him turn on the fans that night because they wanted to do Rollins against Roman again. Nobody was into it. And now, you know, it's like, well, yeah, but they turned Seth Rollins. Since then, it doesn't matter. You lost that window of opportunity for it to be a really hot return. And it's not that Seth isn't over, and it's not that he can't continue to develop a stronger babyface following and reaction, but that window closed. It could have been special. And there's just so many different things you look at, all the attempts that he's made to get Roman Reigns over, and I think it's damaged a lot of things on that brand. I think Kevin Owens could easily be a babyface if they wanted to. I mean, I've said people look at Sami Zayn as the next Daniel Bryan. I look at Kevin Owens as the next Daniel Bryan if they were to play it right. He's kind of an everyday guy with an everyday build. He's a family guy. He loves wrestling. He has that internet credibility, if whatever you want to label it. Sammy's just a little too close to Daniel Bryan. Owens could be that guy. He's got the gift of gab on top of it as well. Everything goes back to, what are we going to do to get Roman over as a babyface? And the answer is, you're not going to. So stop trying and just give in. Turn this guy heel. He can be a tremendous heel. This isn't an I hate Roman Reigns thing at all. This is, he is miscast. And his miscasting has cost them up and down that roster so many different times. So many mistakes have been made because of that.
Jason, real quick, you're talking about windows being closed. Is the window closed now for Roman to be a heel, or is that still open for him to somehow save him to the point where they could convert him back to a babyface if they needed to?
No, I don't think it. I mean, the window, I think, I can't say it closes on him becoming a babyface at some point in the future. I think it becomes tougher. I think the more you kind of cement that the fans don't like Roman, the longer you're going to have to wait to turn him back babyface. But I think he can be an excellent heel. I mean, there's an arrogance to him. It's not even arrogance as much as it is just kind of like athletic confidence. I think there's that jock part of him that comes through that people see as kind of having a heel swagger. They won't let him speak. I mean, he hardly gets to say a word. You saw it again on Monday. Everyone else is talking, and Roman just stands there. As a heel, he can go out there and say some of the things he says in these interviews with mainstream outlets, and it works as a heel. I don't think he even realizes he's a heel.
Jason, there's only one door left open. It's a small little crack, and they're teasing a slight reunion of the Shield with Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns. If they're going to do it, Roman Reigns has to buddy up with Seth Rollins, and he has to turn on Seth Rollins to do the turn complete, to make Seth Rollins the real baby face and just everyone have the heat on Roman Reigns. I think that's the only crack left for Roman Reigns to be full heel.
Yeah, and they need to get Seth over more than he is now. You know, they need to get Seth at his peak of popularity so that people are really with Seth Rollins and excited about Seth, and then Roman stabs him in the back. That's when you do it. Right now, I mean, like I say, Seth is one of the most over guys on the roster, but there's not... He's a top guy, but there's just not that groundswell support like there was for Daniel Bryan. You know, he's not that super over guy. He's popular. If they can get to that point with Seth and then have Roman do it, absolutely. Yeah, that will be big. I just don't know that the timing is right, and I also think they've been looking forward to doing the Seth Rollins and Triple H match for so long that I think you'll see that at WrestleMania.
Wow, Jeff. Seth Rollins, the most over guy right now? You know what, Jason?
You know what? You just made the list.
Because Chris Jericho, I don't care what you
the
have
list
to say,
is over, and Chris Jericho
the most
is just
over
for the
guy.
Ride.
Number two is the list.
Yeah, you know what? I stand corrected. You're right. He really is.
We made the great Jason Powell stand corrected. That's amazing. That's a notch on our list. We'll put that on the list that we actually got to do on our to-do list. We've quieted down Jason Powell.
Oh,
that's
I've
amazing.
Written Jason's name in capital letters with about 5 exclamation points.
Oh,
so.
Jason. We're talking to the very insightful Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net. Switching gears to NXT TakeOver, this is the first time that basically it's basically the new era. You don't see the Finn Balors. You don't, you know, they're not around. He's not around. There's no, you know, Charlotte. There's no Sasha Banks. You know, Bayley's gone.
Women division.
The women's division is exactly. To your eye right now, right on paper, it kind of looks iffy, this card, but do you think it has a chance to be a sleeper?
I'm sorry, which match? The women's?
Oh, no, not even the women's.
The card in general.
The card in general.
We've seen cards before in the past for NXT when we've had, you know, Kevin Owens, Adrian Neville, Sami Zayn, Finn Balor. It's been stacked, even Kevin Owens. Does this card itself, the way it's lined up, a chance to be a sleeper? Because they've set up a huge bar for themselves with their NXT takeovers, always hitting home runs with each one. Does this have a chance to do it?
Yeah, for sure. It does. For a few reasons. Number one, Shinsuke and Joe. I mean, it may not be red hot right now, but that Toronto crowd's going to make it feel that way. That's reason number two is Toronto. I mean, that's going to be a very rowdy, enthusiastic crowd. They're getting NXT up there for the first time, I believe, and they're just going to make this event loud. They're going to make it feel larger than life. And then the other one, keep in mind, they have best of three falls with Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano challenging the Revival. That's going to eat up a lot of time, and that has legitimate match of the year potential in my mind. I think it's going to be special. I really look forward to that match. Asuka and Mickey James will be what it is, but still, it's a returning star. It's Mickey James returning. I think it's a hell of an idea. I like that they're buying themselves some time with the women's division. So, yeah, I mean, is it going to be, you know, once we, I think the atmosphere is going to be tremendous. I think there is potential for two very good matches, if not three. And I think the mood coming out of it is going to be extremely positive. I don't know how it's going to stand the test of time when you start comparing it to what they've done in the past, but I don't think the streak of home run shows ends here, no.
We're going to need to cool off after the Ciampa, Gargano, and Revival match. That is going to be one that we're all going to remember, I think.
I do too, yeah. That's the one I'm looking forward to.
The one in Brooklyn was just amazing. We were, you know, we were there and fortunate enough to be there, and we were just like, oh man, pinfalls. And we saw Mick Foley there, and he was losing his mind to it. The match, they just draw you in, and I think you know they're going to draw us in, and I think that's going to be one of the highlights of the matches too.
Actually, Jeff, I'm more looking forward to, which I think will be, I wouldn't say match of the year, because I agree with you that two or three falls will be memorable one way or the other. Hoping that Ciampa Gargano win that title would be epic for him to do it in Toronto, Canada. This whole Shinsuke Nakamura Samoa Joe rivalry, I've enjoyed it since Brooklyn Takeover 2. I thought it was an amazing match, stole the show basically, and you could tell that both of those guys were feeling the effects afterwards. And for my question to you, Jason, is leading up to this, does it have now the way they're kind of angling it? Do you see something in terms of, you know, Shinsuke has been dominant, he's undefeated, so is Asuka. Is there a situation now where you kind of have to make the guy lose, or in this case, the woman lose, to make it more viable and believable? Because eventually, I mean, look at the Goldberg streak when he was undefeated for how long, right? People begin to resent that. Does Shinsuke need to lose this, and do we need to have some history made where Samoa Joe becomes the first ever two-time NXT champion, or do you see Shinsuke Nakamura walking out the same way he walked in?
You know, the one possibility for this ending on kind of a down note, if they, I assume they close the show with the NXT title match, and I just have a feeling we're not done with this. I think it's going to be very similar to Balor and Joe. They're going to drag this out longer. I mean, the Royal Rumble isn't that far away, and it sure seems like they're going to be doing another live special the night before the Rumble for NXT. And I don't. I mean, you could move on to something else, but I think they're going to come right back to this, and so. Is there a cheap finish? You know, where do they go? But you could be right. It might be Samoa Joe winning, and then we get the rematch at the, you know, Rumble weekend. Hopefully Shinsuke loses, and he enters the Rumble.
A lot of possibilities, too. I could see them. I think NXT does it the right way. They prolong rivalries. I don't mind it when there's good storylines and you have quality matches. So I'd be all for a third one, and it might be the right way to do it.
And Jason has Shinsuke already coming up to the main roster, which is something that, as much as I wanted Finn Balor to go to the main roster, and unfortunately he's injured, like you mentioned yourself, Jason, as soon as they go up to the main roster, I am fearful of what Vince McMahon does with these people.
That's why you hope they all go to SmackDown.
Yeah, they're
actually
exactly.
Going to do a good job with them.
Yeah, but Nakamura looks like a Raw guy, though. He looks like, you know, they can't wait to get him on there, too. Although SmackDown would know what to do with Nakamura. Now,
can you imagine Nakamura and AJ Styles?
Oh, man. You tell me where, and I'll be there. You know, something that I think to me is a positive with NXT is a tag team division. Yes, it was. Yeah. I would say it took maybe a few months for it to get regrouped, but to me, I think it's as hot as ever. I think you got these teams coming in. TM61, Authors of Pain. You got Sanity that debuted a while back. You have, Roderick Strong came back to team up with his tag team partner. With Austin Aries.
Dusty Rhodes Classic.
And
the
Dusty Rhodes Classic. It's amazing. To me, I think this is another thing that's done well. You have teams, you know, not only that, but even if a team's going to lose in the first round, they at least make a name for themselves. You know, at least you know them. To me, I think Authors of Pain are going to come out as the, you know, dominant team now. But I really do think this match has also a good quality, and I love TM61.
Yeah, and I think they can absorb the loss. You know, there's no shame in losing to Authors of Pain right now. They are that monster team of the division. I think it's more damaging if they lose. So I do think they win. But, yeah, you're right about the tag division. What sold me on it was the show you guys were at. When Gargano and Ciampa had that match with the Revival, I'm like, well, they've already replaced American Alpha. We're good to go. No matter what happens underneath, that's going to buy them several months. And as you said, several teams have emerged since then. So, yeah, the NXT tag scene is really strong.
Not only that, but in terms of the tag team division, they all seem like to be hungry guys. I mean, yeah. We talk about that Ciampa, Gargano, and the Revival, that match NXT Brooklyn that Jeff and I were a part of, and you saw. It was just amazing timing. Everything was done, psychology in the ring. Even if they messed up, you could never tell because the crowd was just so into it that it didn't matter if it happened. To me, I always was the belief of, you know, I know you probably, Triple H gets asked this all the time when you're in those conference calls, listen to him, and people are asking him, how do you make new stars? And I'm sure Triple H would be like, well, it takes time. But to me, I think the biggest influence of what made stars were tag teams back then. I mean, look at the Rockers, look at the Hart Foundation. It's just two perfect examples. You have Bret the Hitman Hart and Shawn Michaels coming out of a tag team. I think those tag teams are so vital. So for me, I don't know about you, Jason, I'm just so excited. Not only am I excited for the tag team division on SmackDown, but this NXT tag team division, to me, hopefully, and like I said, it all depends on what happens when they come up and Vince McMahon gets a hold of them. But to me, I'm so excited. I think the future's bright because these guys can be all individual stars themselves if booked properly.
Yeah, I hope that Aries and Strong aren't long for the tag division. I just think they're so good. I think there's actually a need for more singles wrestlers, and I actually fear that we could. You know, it almost seems like they've been teasing Ciampa and Gargano friction along the way. I don't think they're going to pull the trigger on that here, but I could see long-term those guys becoming singles talent as well in NXT. But, I mean, we're not that far removed from Vince McMahon being on this anti-tag team kick. It really, it is amazing from NXT to the main roster just how deep things are. And it's unfortunate that they've completely wasted Anderson and Gallows. And
God, Jason. That is one of my gripes.
Watch out, Jason. Just about to go into a little rant
completely,
here.
No, I'm not going to go on to it because, you know, we've got talked to about TakeOver and stuff. But, again, that is a shame what happened to Gallows and Anderson. They had a better story to tell. And, well, you know, that's maybe like a whole documentary on that one. But
He's turning red, folks.
A division that still seems to be trying to, you know, regain its form is the women's division. There are some bright spots. Ember Moon, Liv Morgan. There are some bright spots, but right now they're choosing Mickie James to headline this special TakeOver. Your thoughts on the women's division, and is Mickie James the right choice for Asuka? It just gets her more over.
I think it's a great move. I really do. I think you buy yourself time. You know, I was talking about that as soon as they announced it. Like, this buys them some time to help get these, you know, give these other women more time to get themselves over, get them in key positions, and really give them time to improve in many cases. I think Ember Moon is next. I think that'll be the next long program with Asuka and Ember Moon. And I saw them work at a house show in St. Paul, and they work really well together. That's going to be a fun program when they get to it. And that's going to buy the women underneath them some more time as well. It's, I mean, they took everyone but Asuka, essentially, from that division. And so, yeah, naturally it's going to take some time, but they have some pieces there. And I think it would have been too soon to rush into Ember Moon on this show. And so bringing in Mickey, it not only does it buy time, but it gives the overall card a boost. You know, that's one that, yeah, we've seen her in TNA, and it wasn't all that great and all that. But if you're just a WWE fan, or even if just a wrestling fan, the idea of seeing her back in a WWE ring, albeit NXT, that's exciting. And by the way, have you noticed they really don't play that up on the Raw or SmackDown shows? I wonder if it's because they're going to have Mickie James appear in a WWE ring soon.
Well, that's another question. I wanted to ask you. Does this whole thing with Mickie James seem like a one and done? It's just basically to put Asuka over? Or do you see some long-term potential for Mickie to actually stay a little bit longer?
The potential is there to do more. I know it was, when the deal was made, it was a one-off. But I know she is open to doing more. Whether they are remains to be seen, but I don't see why not. I mean, they have like 6-7 women in each division on Raw and SmackDown. They need more. She can still go. She brings, I think they'll be very pleasantly surprised. If there's any doubters in WWE, the nice thing is it's Toronto. They are going to go crazy for Mick when she comes out. It's just going to, you know, it's a homecoming kind of, not Toronto itself, but just her coming back and being in a WWE ring after all these years. I think they're going to go crazy for her, and I think that's going to open some eyes, and she ends up doing more.
I think the Toronto crowd would be kind of against Mickie James, wouldn't you say?
Well, they could, you know, because of the Asuka, but I think the atmosphere for the match is going to be strong enough. You know, that's the thing. You never know with the Canadian crowd, and if that does happen, I hope it's not used against her, like it's her fault and she's not over like they thought she might be or something like that. because it is, you're right, it is a different crowd. But I have hopes that it's going to be, yeah, they may cheer Asuka, but they also cheer Mickie James. They're going to be excited to see her.
Well, talk about the Canada crowd. The guy that's probably going to get the biggest pop of the whole night is going to be
Glorious
Match, and it's going to be Bobby Roode and Ty Dillinger. To me, when you see this match, you think Ty Dillinger is the younger guy. He should get over. But honestly, though, there's no way that you can stop the whole Glorious movement. And to me, Bobby Roode and Ty Dillinger, I think, is also going to be another match that is going to exceed expectations.
Well, we'll see. That's another match that I got to see in person at the house show. And it was just a house show. It was a comedy match, and it was a really good one.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that I won't bore people details about a house show too much, but it was the end of a kind of a rough weekend for them as far as their travel was concerned. And it was on a Sunday, and you could just tell, like, it wasn't, you know, people weren't delivering their A performances. And so there was a lot of comedy on the show. But that's the one that really stood out. If they work a similar style match, it wouldn't surprise me unless they have plans for Roode. You know, if Roode is going to be next in line for Nakamura or something like that, well, then maybe it's a little more straight-laced. But I don't be surprised if that's a heavy comedy match. Again, if it is, it's going to be a fun one. I saw it in person. It was great. They really had some – they just went out there and had fun. They had a lot of cool ideas, and every single one of them worked with that crowd.
You know, you talk about – it being a comedy match, and I really see, you know, Roode could be next in line for Nakamura eventually down the road, maybe towards Mania, maybe, because if Samoa Joe and Nakamura fight for the third time, it'll be towards the Royal Rumble. How great is this experience for fans to not only get to go to Survivor Series, but also hit up TakeOver on Saturday? How good are these destination weekends to go for the WWE in events?
Yeah, I mean, it started with Mania, obviously, and I think it added a lot. And I love that they moved the Hall of Fame to Friday now. NXT will be Saturday. It's just such a good move, especially, you know, people don't think about this. And it's, we'll go back to JR again, because he's talked about it a lot over the years. You're asking these guys, the night before the biggest night of their careers, to sit there in a chair, sometimes for 6 hours during the Hall of Fame. So you move that to Friday, we'll get that out of the way. Then the main roster talent has Saturday night to, you know, I'm sure they'll have autograph signings and things, but they can kind of chill out. So I love that. But just the overall, you know, they extended it to SummerSlam, and it just works. You know, it's something that I think we all saw coming as far as, like, there being potential to kind of piggyback off these shows with NXT. Lord knows every indie group out there piggybacks off of these major WWE events, and rightfully so. So why shouldn't WWE? And yeah, it's just a great 1-2 punch. I'm very disappointed that WrestleMania isn't coming to Minneapolis like it was supposed to at one time.
Maybe next year. You never know. They're in the running for that one next year.
There was something, the rumored holdup had something to do with, like, it was financial. And I just don't know if it's one of those where, let's do this next year and we can make it work with the budget, or if it's just a no-go. I'm not sure.
Jason, I would just love to go to Minneapolis and cover that for, you know, 30-degree weather in Minneapolis. I don't know what the weather is like in April and March, but how would you like to do that, cover WrestleMania in 30-degree weather?
You never know at that time of year.
Yeah.
First week of April, it could be a foot of snow on the ground. It could be 65, 70 degrees. I mean, it's crazy. April is just the least predictable month we have.
Jason, you cover wrestling. You can obviously, I can tell the passion in your voice when you talk about it, the knowledge, the years that you've put into this. Hopefully that you can tell that we have a passion for it too. How did you get started? How did you get involved in this?
I was a longtime fan. I mean, I started watching wrestling. I still remember the first time I saw it, but I don't know what year it was. I'm going to, roughly 1980, and it was AWA wrestling. And I was hooked. You know, I just hadn't seen it before, and it just immediately, I was drawn to it.
Who was your guy?
Say again?
Who was the guy for you? Like, who was your wrestler? Like, that's it. I want to be like this guy. For me, it was Hulk Hogan. First watching, it's Hulk Hogan. Of course, I was hooked.
Yeah, he wasn't there yet, but he certainly became that. He probably was the first guy. I mean, you know, I liked the High Flyers, didn't really care about Vern Gagne because he was kind of at the end of his run, and it just was, you know, to me as a young kid, here's this old bald guy. It was like, what about today's guys? And so, yeah, I think Hogan was probably the first guy that I really latched on to. Hulkamania was so big in the Twin Cities during that run. And everyone associates it with WWE. it really took off in the AWA, and it was huge. So I just was a fan for many years and developed a really good friendship with Wade Keller over at PWTorch.com. One day, he approached me about being kind of a jack-of-all-trades at the site. It was basically, at that time, it was just newsletter. There wasn't even a Pro Wrestling Torch website, just the newsletter. And so I took him up on that, and it was supposed to be kind of, like I say, jack-of-all-trades, help with the printing. There really wasn't much talk of writing, maybe do a TV review or something like that. And that quickly changed. And I would say within a matter of weeks, I just became the assistant editor and was, helping out, doing so much with the newsletter. And it just, it kind of grew from there. And I was there for roughly 5 years and then ended up leaving wrestling and going to work for fanball.com, which is fantasy football. It's no longer around, but it was a big deal.
Because you left.
Say again?
Because you left.
One more time.
Because you left.
There you go. Well, no, they were going to move the company to St. Louis, and I had the opportunity to go, and I'm like, no, thank you. As bad as Minnesota's weather is, I just didn't have any desire to move to St. Louis, especially under new management. I'll just leave it at that so I don't get sued. But yeah, okay. And so I was at Bamball for about 5 years, but I still was doing things at the Torch but mostly being a fan. And then it just felt like the right time to get back into it. And so I dove in head first with ProWrestling.net.
Well, like Jeff mentioned before, Jason, the passion and enthusiasm you have when you talk about it is just, it's addictive too. I mean, we love to surround ourselves with the same amount of people that obviously watch this, I guess, from a different perspective, because again, we're not the kids anymore. We're actually rooting for our guys to win or lose in some way in terms of how they're being booked. But no doubt the work you do is so good. And more people, if you guys haven't listened to it yet or read about it, again, catch a lot of the work that Jason does on ProWrestling.net. Check out the interview you did with Jim Ross, as well as this interview as well, on the Ross Report and High Spot Podcast. Jason, with all the stuff you're doing, how busy you are, and WrestleMania just around the corner, besides WrestleMania, anything else you're working on right now that we should keep our eye on?
It's the day-to-day grind, man. It's funny. You talk about the enthusiasm. If we were doing this a week from now, I would have none, because those pay-per-view weekends, especially when you tack on NXT. Well, the last one we had NXT. We had, I don't even remember which pay-per-view it was, but we also had Ring of Honor that week. And it's like, oh, my God.
Wasn't it like SummerSlam weekend?
It was SummerSlam weekend we had.
It was, yeah.
Everything was so little. It was like, you're like, by Tuesday, you're like, oh, my God, SmackDown Live.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, 3 hours of Ring of Honor and a couple hours of NXT, and then however ridiculously long SummerSlam was, and then just the marathon that is Raw, and then SmackDown. Like, by the time Wednesday gets here, after those weeks, I'm just like, oh, God, I don't even want to think about pro wrestling.
So I'm glad we got you now and you gave us your A+ instead of you giving us mailing it in effort. So I'm glad we got you on this week then.
Yeah, keep that in mind for future reference. Don't have that idiot on right after a pay-per-view.
Check. We put that on the list as well with your name, just to make sure. But, Jason, we thank you so much for your time. I mean, Jeff and I, we're planning on doing a end-of-the-year listing up all the great matches from, I don't know if we're doing from 25 to 1 or 10 to 1.
No, we're going to do top 10 matches.
Top 10 matches. If you have any time, we would love to have you back on again, too, because we just love your insight and love your take on it, too. And, who knows, maybe before WrestleMania is over, we'll have a whole new list and it'll be reshuffled. But love to have you back on again, Jason, when you have the time. And thank you so much for your contribution to the High Spot Podcast.
Hey, thank you, guys. I really enjoyed it, and we'll definitely do it again.
Much appreciated, Jason. Thank you, man.
So much thanks goes out to Jason Powell. Again, you guys can catch all the stuff he does on ProWrestling.net and also his contributions to the Ross Report, which you guys can listen to on Podcast One. He has a lot of enthusiasm, Jeff, in not just NXT, but just in professional wrestling in general. So it's just great to get his perspective on things, and I say this to every guest. We could talk to him for hours because it's just that much that we can go to in terms of dissecting the card, but also the potential of what can be, because before you know it, we're going right to WrestleMania, and that's where things start getting even more exciting.
Oh, it's great, because it sounds just like three fans shooting the breeze, talking about what they like and what they love, and that's pro wrestling, and talking about, what's going to happen. And I know Jason got caught off guard with my theory on Triple H and NXT. It's, he's going to credit me. He's going to credit me if my theory comes to fruition, but we'll see. But
I think half of your theory will come to fruition, but yeah.
Well, you think Triple H, I think Triple H and NXT, so we'll see.
So if I'm correct, I'm half right, and then you're half wrong, and vice versa?
Exactly. That's how it's going to be. But Jason Powell, thank him so much. Again, his contributions on the Ross Report and on ProWrestling.net. Jason Powell, we look forward to having you again soon, hopefully by the end of the year. And again, he might do our top 10 matches of 2016. And there's a lot of stuff to look forward to in December. But right now, what I'm looking forward to is Survivor Series. I'm looking forward to the matches, and I'm looking forward to TakeOver Nakamura and Samoa Joe. But also what I want to look forward to is the turkey and Thanksgiving, and I want to wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving here from the High Spot Podcast.
And we're thankful for you listening to the High Spot Podcast. You guys can catch us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast, as well as Brain Stew Radio Network, our partnership with Chris Hamill there. Thank you very much.
Love you, Hamill.
Another thing to be thankful for. So, for Jeff Martin, I am Brian Berger. We are the Jersey Wrecking Crew. And after listening to this episode and eating that turkey, your life is just too sweet.